So people will pay you to find a deal and then they'll pay you again to manage the deal. That's a great business model. What did you graduate in?
Business management.
Interesting.
I did aerospace engineering. We then went on to the academy and we put all of our savings into it.
Everything I've learned in our property business has not been from university. We keep a good relationship with all our clients that we work with and we stage their property how we would stage ours.
Oh, I sense that there's probably a bit more money in the sourcing, but your heart's really in management.
100%. We enjoy it.
JK Alpha Property Management. We've got Cush and Gavin, and you guys are really making a name for yourself doing property management, specifically in serviced accommodation in London. So one of the big questions that people ask me a lot is, how do you get around the rules and regulations in London? Because there's the 90-day restriction for short stay lets. How are you navigating through that?
So obviously everyone's quite worried about 90-day rule, and that's one of, we get that question all the time. And the main thing that we always tell everyone is 90-day rule is only listed for Airbnb. It's not listed for any other travel agency sites.
Well, so if you're on booking.com, you're saying they think that's fine?
Yeah, there is no 90-day rule on
really?
It. Really? Yeah, there is none.
Is it great? Is it a bit grey?
It is a bit grey.
Because yeah. I hear different experts, different planning consultants saying different things.
No, everyone says different things, but from what we've done and what we've researched, that we've only found it in Airbnb.
And they're the ones that will literally regulate it and restrict and stop you doing it.
Yeah,
absolutely. And a lot of people try and get around it with like multiple Airbnb accounts and things like that. I mean, one of the things that I know you're doing really well is pushing more towards a medium-term booking so it doesn't class as a short stay.
Yeah.
What is the definition of a short let?
So short let is anything that is classified, we think, from 1 day to 1 week.
Right.
So anything in that classes as a 90-day, because we've had a booking for 14 days and it hasn't come up in the 90-day rule. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking anything over a week is classed as a midterm. And then if you go over a month, it's classed as a long-term.
So you've got investors that are based in London that are renting out their property, maybe getting $2,000 a month for it. And you're going, hey, you do realize you could get like $6,000 a month or $7,000 a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you rent it out on short to medium stay lets.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Talk me through how that works, what that looks like for an investor. So let's say I'm an investor, I've got a London apartment, I'm getting a $2,500 a month, and you look at it and you think, like, what's your proposition to me and what would that look like?
So our proposition would be, you're getting that smaller rent, whereas if we helped you, we took over your property as management, we would take a good 15% and we'd make sure that you're hitting those higher marks off your cash flow for the month. So you can be hitting anywhere up to £6,000 to £7,000. In zone one areas, you could be even hitting up to £8,000 because there's a high demand. London's a very good area for service accommodation.
Yeah.
So we'd ensure that your property's staged to a service accommodation standard and ensure that bookings come in from 80 to 100% occupancy. So yeah, we'd offer you that stability of a hands-off investment for you to get that high cash flow for your property.
And then if you've got multiple properties, like if I've got six properties and I give you one and I go, oh geez, now that one
is making
almost as much money as all the other four or five together, then you're going to pass you multiple. So that's kind of, I guess, how you're growing, just through doing the do
and
word of mouth.
Because I think one of our properties in Canary Wharf, so we had a landlord who had an empty apartment in a block and he owned the whole block and he didn't know what to do with this empty apartment. It wasn't renting out and it wasn't selling. So we decided, let's turn it into an SA. We told him how to do it, what to do. He let us manage it and everything. And now that one apartment is making more than the actual other apartments in the block on turnover per month. And it's crazy that he didn't even think that SA can make that much. And it's something.
Oh, no, it is. It's huge. And it's catching on. Even mortgage lenders are catching on now, because a lot of mortgage lenders back in sort of like 2016, 2017, when I started doing serviced accommodation, a lot of lenders would say, we don't understand that. And they wouldn't let you do it. Whereas now more and more lenders are realizing that actually this is a thing.
Yeah.
And they're getting with the times, and Kent Reliance, Precise Mortgages, there's many that are saying, yeah, okay, we'll give you permission to do that. And they're even tailoring products specifically for people that want to rent out their property on short stay lets. One of the big problems that people face though is restrictions on the leasehold. So they'll have a, if it's a flat, it will be a leasehold, and then there'll be a restriction that was with the freeholder to say that they can't do it. Have you found that problematic?
We have found a few deals that we wanted to do ourselves, and when we went down to like the nitty gritty and we said, okay, like, does it have the SA contract for this? And when they had a look at the background of it, it's like you said, it's a leasehold and everything, and they actually don't have an SA clause that they could do it, they can't convert it into a holiday let, and they still want to do it.
Yeah,
but because they know how lucrative the money is.
Oh yeah, of course.
And they want to do it, and now they regret it, but they want to find a way where they can switch it back into a holiday let, which takes a huge process. And obviously it's not something that we do because we don't want to get caught up into the mix, because we wouldn't know how to convert.
Let's say I'm an investor and I've got a property in London, and you say to me, because you don't know what the freehold restrictions are.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? You could see a property and you could see an apartment, and you could, okay, that would work well for serviced accommodation. And then you could speak to me, and then I could say, oh man, I really want to do it, but I've got a restriction with my freeholder. How often does that happen? What sort of percentages? Because I know not all apartments have got restrictions on serviced accommodation, but some do. So what kind of percentage from your experience would you say does that become a deal breaker?
From what we've realized, we've viewed at least 10 to 12, and I think about 5 to 6 of them have restrictions.
Okay, so about half.
At least have restrictions.
That's annoying.
It is annoying, because if they didn't have the restrictions, they were all perfectly good deals as well. The landlord was interested. He was happy to go for it, but because of the restrictions, but we still keep in contact with them. And now what they do, they check their, they're having to look at their mortgage. They're trying to see if they can change it and switch it into a holiday let, but it's just a longer process for them.
You know, it's interesting, because some people say to me like, oh, it doesn't, service accommodation doesn't work because there's too many restrictions on the on flats for with the head lease. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe 50% of London flats do have restriction, but 50% don't. Yeah, so rather than just, oh, 50% don't, well, what about the ones that do? You'll throw seeds and some will land on the rocky ground and some will land on the fertile ground. And that's kind of part and parcel, isn't it? So what you're doing then is not rent to rent. It's just management.
Yeah, management, just management.
Yeah.
And we've realized we're making more money just in management than we are when we're own. Like, if we take it out of zone one and we go out of London, let's say we got 2 in Reading and we got 1 in Windsor, the 2 in Reading, we're profiting about £1,000 a month. And we're paying all the bills, the rent, the cleaning staff, everything. We're paying all of that. When we take on a management deal in Zone 1 London, we're making £800 a month just through management. And that's just doing all the online stuff.
Let's break these numbers down a second then. So you've got properties outside London, like Reading.
Yeah.
Where else have you got properties?
Windsor.
Windsor as well.
Okay.
Windsor's a really good one.
How much are you making on a Windsor property?
The last 2 months, we've been making summer's really peak season, so we've been making a good 1,600 to 1,900.
Jeez, but that's rent to rent.
That's rent to rent.
So that's where you're renting the property, and then you're renting out for a higher amount. What about in the more average seasons when it's not summer? How much you make?
So in the average seasons in Reading, you're looking around about £800 to £1,000.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
But you're making more in the management side of things.
Yeah, because
jeez,
even in Paddington alone, our Paddington property, we're making £800 a month just through management.
I guess from your point of view, there's a lot of advantages to just straight management as opposed to rent to rent.
So the return on investment is obviously just 100%, because we're not putting any money down. So every month it's just straight money coming into our account, but also we're managing the property for our landlord and promising them or guaranteeing them more rent that they would get from a single let. So it's a win-win for both of us.
So with Reading and Windsor and those other places, you're making about £1,000 a month, but that's after you've paid all the bills, and that's profit, that's right? Profit. But you've still got the hassle of having to pay the bills.
Of course,
you've got the risk of, if it doesn't rent out, you've still got to give the landlord their guaranteed rent. Yeah. And you've got to furnish it, stage it, pay upfront rent, because you're effectively renting it and then renting out for a higher amount, which is a great strategy. But what you're doing is just management.
Just pure management, where it's not that we have zero responsibility. We have responsibility on the management side, but to the landlord, we don't have any ties.
It's a great way of getting more rent though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you just, especially with with interest rates going up. As a landlord myself, right, let's say I've got a property and I'll historically have been renting out for $2,000 a month, but the mortgage payments are $1,000, then my gross profit is $1,000.
Yeah.
But if interest rates have now doubled, my profit's gone. So I can either just accept that I'm not making any profit or pass my property to people like you guys and say, actually, can you, or figure it out myself and learn serviced accommodation like you did and go through the training and go through the, but a lot of landlords are lazy and would prefer to just pass it over. What do you charge them percentage wise?
So what we tend to do, obviously we like to work with our clients. So with our clients, we normally, with London, we like to take 20%, but what we tend to do, we like to work with them. So in the winter seasons, we take 12%. And then in the summer seasons, we take 15%. Even though we take that much, because of what we're making, and we're making 90% to 100%, they're still making $1,500, $2,000 profit.
So you're going to charge between 12 and 20%, depending on the location, depending on the property, depending on the landlord, depending on the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. That sounds fair. And 20% sounds like a lot, but you're having to like do an awful lot for that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's completely effectively hands-off for the landlord. And like you were saying earlier, they can do it themselves, but we found a lot of these,
they don't have to do it themselves.
There's so much to it. There's
so much systemization. They don't have to do it.
They don't have to.
They don't know how to do it. Getting it on booking.com alone and getting cleaners and systemization and getting all the check-in and check-out process. And it's a business.
Yeah, of course.
And you need to understand the business, you know, and you need to learn. And if you just have a bash, oh, just stick it on Airbnb. Well, for a start, you probably can't in London because Airbnb don't let you.
Yeah.
How does one go about putting it on late rooms?
Yeah.
And also, how does one stop getting double bookings and dealing with reviews?
Yeah.
You guys have systemized it, though, super well.
Yeah.
Have you got staff?
Yeah.
Yes.
How many?
We have two staff now. So obviously we have our power team, we've got our maintenance team, we've got our cleaning team. Our cleaning team does all of our properties, and they're the best cleaning team. They make sure they're
I bet they are.
They have the soaps ready, they have everything.
And the way they do the beds, they do the covers, everything.
Everything's crisp and clean and it's perfect. And we also have two VAs that now, we got a VA handling our management side, because when we were doing it before, it was taking a lot of time out of what we wanted to do because we were managing quite a lot.
It was effectively like a full-time job, but we want to replace our full-time job, not by doing it ourselves, by systemizing things so we can focus on obviously bigger tasks.
Do you use a channel management or do you?
Yes.
Who do you use?
Uplisting.
Do you? Interesting. Yeah. See, I hear a lot about, there's a lot, almost seems to be a split between Avivo and Uplisting.
We did start with Avivo when we first started and it was going well and everything like that. And then someone mentioned to us, have a look at Uplisting. They say Uplisting is better when you have multiple properties. So we had a look at it and I think it just resonated with us. And we thought, you know what? Uplisting does do a little bit better. Not saying Avivo is bad. Avivo is great. But I think Avivo is great when you're first starting out in property and you're first getting.
Avivo is the one that we kind of recommend.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't get any kickback or anything like that, but Avivo is the one that we sort of show people. And that the reason is because that's just the one that I used.
Yeah.
And there's loads though. There's loads of channel managers. There's not just Uplisting and Avivo. So what does an average day to day look like then for you guys? Well,
starting off, we first of all get our staff ensure we speak to them, understand their tasks for the day. And then we moved on to kind of commercial sourcing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're speaking to landowners, finding deals on different property sites, Rightmove, Zoopla, Property Link as well.
Yeah.
And we're trying to kind of fully focus on that.
Right. So you're selling, and you've sold quite a lot of deals to date as well, haven't you?
We've sold quite a few. I think we're getting more bespoke investors now.
Right.
So people are willing to pay $3,000 up front. So like in the last month, we had another two or three investors that were paying $3,000 up front just for an SA deal. So we're sourcing quite a bit as well.
So people will pay you to find a deal.
Yeah.
and then you'll find it, and then they'll pay you again to manage the deal.
Yeah.
And then you've systemized it, you've got staff. That's a great business model.
Yeah. And I think our power team is what people really want, because they don't know where to get the best cleaners. They don't know how to do uplisting. They don't know how to link it to Price Labs, how to manage Price Labs.
Yeah.
Managing Price Labs is an algorithm on its own. And that's something that we have learned, and we took time to learn it.
Yeah.
So it's just our knowledge is what they're paying for, in a way.
How does one choose a good property management company? Let's say that, because there's many property managers. Let's say that I was thinking, you know what? I've got an apartment. I can't be bothered to deal with it myself. I want to find someone like you guys, hands on deck. What are the things to look for and the red flags when you're looking for a management company?
I think firstly, look at reputation, look at their properties that they've done before, see how well they performed. And if they're getting that high occupancy, I think it's a no-brainer.
See
the power team, see what kind of properties they have, with the location of the properties and how well they're doing. And if they're doing quite well.
How do you know that though? Because they could just be bluffing, right?
Well, you can ask them for their Airbnb link, or you can ask them for their booking.com link. And if they say they're hitting the 90% occupancies, you can then check their Airbnb, check their availability on their calendars.
And see if it looks booked up.
And if it looks really booked up, you can say, okay, there might be... they're telling the truth. Yeah. And then you can go into further, see reviews from other clients, see testimonials from other clients, make sure they all match up with people. Okay. And you can call around. You can, because Property Network is such a close
community. It is. The property community is small.
You can talk around. Have you ever heard of these lot? Are they really good? And if they say, nah, they're not that great, then you can say, okay, then you can have another conversation. But if they say, yeah, they're amazing, they do this, then you can...
What would happen? What's the exit strategy from an investor's point of view? Because what I'd be thinking is, I'll try it, but if I want to know if it doesn't work, that there's an exit. So if you're managing my property and charging me 15% and you're going to go and whack it on uplisting, late rooms, all the different sites, booking.com. And after 6 months, I'm just like, actually, this isn't really working. It's hit and miss.
Yeah.
It's up and down. What's your contractual terms?
So we try and hold out for the first year. So our contract lasts for a year, but we have a review every 3 months. So every quarter we have a review.
What happens if it's going terrible after 3 months and you've not got me any bookings?
So then what we do, we have a review and we try and understand why there's no bookings, because we want to learn why we're not making bookings, because normally we make a load of bookings, but we have to understand the season, the location, the people, what type of events are going on, and we try and focus on it. And if the landlord says, look, I don't want to do this, then we part ways.
Okay,
so obviously because we haven't got any money invested, we can part ways.
But I guess the interesting thing is, let's say you weren't getting any bookings, which we all know wouldn't happen. But let's say it did. You're not making any money either.
Exactly.
Because you're only getting paid a percentage of the bookings.
Yeah.
So if you don't get any bookings, it's not working. I guess, after a few months, you know what?
And we will work hard to make these bookings, because at the end of the day, we want to make a name for ourselves. And people, because I remember one person asked me, why should I pick you if I can pick this company that I've been working for 10 years? But then when you say to them, actually, but that company has a list of people that they're working with, you're just another person in their book. They won't like prioritize you the way we will. And we will work 24/7. So that's something that...
So your key now is to ensure that when you go big, that you're able to
still prioritize every single person.
Yeah.
And we pride ourselves on that as well. We keep a good relationship with all our clients that we work with. And that's another thing. So if somebody wants to speak to... because we've taken on people's properties and they want to speak to other people's properties we've taken on. And we pass on their numbers and they've always given us a good review because...
They know that we put
in the work. We don't treat them just like a random customer who we're listing their property. We treat their property with respect and we stage their property how we would stage ours. We make sure it's on the top standard to make sure.
How does it work in terms of the sourcing side of things then? So what are your investors kind of looking for? You mentioned commercial. What sort of stuff?
So in commercial, we're trying to look for landowners that have about 2.5 acres to about 5 acres worth of land, edge of town. And we're trying to look for someone either with consent or without consent who doesn't know what to do with the land. They've just got a land and they want to sell it on. And we're trying to get in contact with these type of people to maybe offer because we have a lot of operators in the leisure requirements that want to build leisure requirements in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of places, especially in Surrey and Basingstoke, those types of areas, that they are looking for leisure requirements. And yeah, we're just trying to find people that would land option to sell.
And the people who don't know what to do with the land, they're probably getting a lot of people offering to take the land off them, but they don't know what they're doing with the land.
They don't know how much it's worth.
How much it's worth.
Right. So you're basically packaging that type of thing and then passing on to investors that are looking for land.
Yeah.
And charging a fee.
Yeah.
And how does that link? Is that not a distraction from your management company, or does it coincide? Is it the same investors that are giving you their properties that are looking for land? What's the synergy?
No, these are totally different. So when we have our investor lists, because we've got over 200 investors just for SAs alone. And what we do, any person that comes in that looking for commercials or looking for BRRs or anything like that, we always split them apart.
Yeah.
So we make sure that they're different to them, because unless they say they want to do SAs and they want to find that, then we'll have a conversation.
You have to choose to close down one business, either you can never source anymore. The sourcing business is, you're banned from sourcing any more deals ever, or you're banned from doing property management. Which one would you keep?
Good question. It's a difficult one, because
I imagine, sorry to interrupt, but I imagine your bread and butter is the management.
Yeah.
But then the big chunks of money is the sourcing.
Yeah.
I think we're probably going to have different opinions on this. Mm. For me, I would give up the management and go straight into commercial, because if I put all my effort and time into that, I can make, like, literally, if I sell 30 deals of an SA, I can make the same amount of selling one deal on a commercial. And it's just something I think is much better and more bigger in chunks of money. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I can do better, I feel.
I agree with you, to be fair. I was going to say, obviously, we've invested a lot of time into the management, and it's amazing. Our goal is to be one of the biggest management companies in London, providing our services. But with the commercial sourcing, if we were to put all our efforts into that, like Kush was saying,
I sense that there's probably a bit more money in the sourcing, but your heart's really in management.
100%. Yeah. We enjoy it.
And you just love taking on investors' properties, helping them scale up their income.
Yeah.
And it's so needed in today's economy.
Yeah, 100%. Because people, like the older generation, they kind of don't know too much. When we speak to them about service accommodation, they don't know, they've heard about it, but they don't actually know how to systemize it, ensure that everything is in order, uplisting, channel manager, cleaning. They wouldn't know how to do
that. How long ago did you get into property? How did it start and what happened?
So we started out 2 years ago, coming up to 2 years.
And what, did you have any background or knowledge in property prior?
Obviously my parents, they were into property. They have 7 properties of their own, and but when they got it was a perfect time. They got it in 1999 to 2000 years.
They tried to teach you what we did. They don't work anymore.
Yeah. it was quite cheap back then, but now it's very expensive. So
when salaries were 20 grand and houses were 40.
Yeah.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. And
but now it's a whole different market.
And we wanted to do property. I've always wanted to do property, but just didn't know how to get into it until obviously we ran into your seminar at the time and we booked the £1 crash course. And yeah, we were doing book clubs, NFTs, we were doing crypto, we were doing all sorts beforehand, trying to see how we can make money, learn about money, where money comes from.
And I think also, sorry to interrupt, that education prior to actually going to your course, like getting our mindset correct, reading that the 2 books, Think and Grow Rich and the 10x Rule, it set us up so well for when we came to your event. And I feel like you portrayed everything that was in those books to us as well. Mm. So it made us believe you.
So you did a bit of personal development, tried in crypto and NFT. And how did that go? Did you make much money in crypto, isn't it?
No. It was more sense. We did research. We were literally about to buy our first NFT before we went to your free crash course.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we went to your course, it was less like,
we just pushed it aside. We just said,
okay. So what happened to the crash course that was so, like, revolutionary?
I don't know. It was the energy that we felt. Like, as soon as you walked in, everyone stood up, started cheering, started clapping. And we thought, okay, there's a good reason. And I remember the first day, or was it the second time, I think, I stood up and I spoke to you and I was trying to sell myself. And I think you asked me a question, and I think you said
go to the back and like hook onto the course, and you kind of just stood there like,
oh, what do I do? So then I went back after.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah. And then you spoke to him after, like, Kush, I didn't mean to kind of put a stick on you, just the first person sort of thing.
Because I was the first person to put my hand up, and I stood up.
And I think you were trying to pitch me or sell me on something. I can't remember. And I was just like, you know what you need? You need access to investors. You need some mentor, and you need go to the back right now. Sit with my team, get enrolled. And you did, which I guess worked out.
And then we joined the academy after that. And we just got going, and we started networking with loads of people.
What did your parents think of when you joined the academy and everything?
Do you know what? I personally never told my parents. They were quite supportive, but they were always like, be wary, hesitant. They wanted me to keep looking for like a 9-to-5 job. We graduated from university and stuff like that. But
what did you graduate in?
Business management.
Interesting.
Funny thing, I did aerospace engineering.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It's something completely different, but that's what, because obviously with them, they wanted us to get an education. They wanted us to get a nice job and just to save up money, then buy a house through that.
That doesn't work anymore.
It doesn't work anymore.
What do they think when you told them, when you said, nah, man, I'm not getting a job. I'm not going to be saving up money and buying houses. Instead, I'm going to be a property entrepreneur.
Yeah, they were hesitant. They said they thought I was crazy, and they thought you can't do this. You're 23. People don't know you. You don't know the property. You don't know how it works. You don't know how to build. You don't know how to do this and that. I know they were not telling me off in a way, but they were teaching me, look, take a stable route. Don't take a riskier route. Yeah. And I think now their minds have changed because they've seen us, how much money we're making, and they see how much of attention we're getting and all of that. Like, our social media has tripled in value, and they always watch our videos and they're always liking it. They're always seeing it.
The best way to convince your friends and family to support you is to show them the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't convince them. And most people will try and stop you, not because no negative untoward reason, but just because they want to protect you. Yeah. And they're like, man, you know, be safe, be careful. But being careful and being safe, you can't be safe and secure and also have freedom.
Yeah, 100%. I think taking risks is a massive factor. You need to put yourself out there because you're going to regret it.
Yeah.
How was your experience working with me over the last year or so then on the academy?
It's been amazing. All the mentors that we spoke to, anytime we needed, we had a problem and we couldn't get any help, we went to the mentors, and they supplied us with so much.
And that's why now your investors pass their properties to you, because you've invested in yourself. You know what you're doing. Yeah. You've walked the walk.
Yeah.
You've learned it. You spent a year going through all the training, getting mentored, took the time out to come to the crash course, come to the training. And now you've got the knowledge, the experience. And if they can't be bothered to do that, then they'll just pass their house to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they want to go down that same route and they want to learn from scratch, then obviously that's also great.
100%. If they would like to do that, that's completely up to them. Obviously, it takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
But if you've got that time and effort, I'd highly recommend doing it.
I think personally, it's my opinion, if you want to be a business person, it's probably more beneficial investing in your personal development and going on my programs, going reading books like you read, like Think and Grow Rich. Mm. That's probably going to help you more than even, well, you'll probably be in a better position to say, than going to uni to study business.
Because I wanted to touch on this as well. Like, everything I've learned in our property business has not been from university. Like, the teacher that's teaching me, or the tutor, she doesn't have a business. She's not driving an amazing car that showed that she's had a successful business. She's teaching me something that she hasn't actually done herself.
But she's messed up, man. It's messed up.
It really is. I think the whole system is a bit...
But then isn't it interesting, because your parents probably will be clapping you going to business university, learning from basically a fake guru.
Basically.
But then you go on something like the academy or come to the crash course.
It's invaluable.
And pay a pound to go to crash course, and people are like, oh, be careful.
Yeah.
Isn't it mad?
I know, it is mad. And it's just something that's weird, because if they haven't done it and they haven't walked through it, how can you trust them? How can you say, oh.
Teach you from textbooks that were written 60 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it worked 60 years ago.
At the end of the day, it's just a piece of paper. It's not much anything else.
I think university will really help you if you want to get a job.
I think, if you were like, I always said university is great if you're like trying to be a lawyer, a medical profession, a doctor.
Well, did you see the video I did when I was outside Cambridge University?
I was stopping people
outside university that were studying all kinds of subjects. They were studying like economics. They were studying all kinds of different subjects. And I was asking them just basic questions like, you know, what's capital gains tax? And they'd be like, don't know. What's, you know, how do you work out the return on investment? Don't know. What's base rate? Not sure. And it's like, man, made me question whether I even want my kids to go to school.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you leave school when you're at university, you're 23 and you don't know basics of economics, yeah, basics of finance, it's mad.
It is mad. And I think...
What are they teaching you?
I think the school's a system to get you into working a 9-to-5. I don't think they want... Because they don't teach us anything about financials or
how to spend it in a better way,
yeah,
how to get the discounts, how to get this,
how to negotiate.
They don't
learn at business school when you went to, did you learn how to set up a, like how to start a business?
No. We didn't know.
What did you learn?
We learned about, it was simple things. It was like marketing, managing people, but
did you learn about CRM systems?
No.
How can they teach you about marketing but not about CRM systems?
Do they just...
I don't even think these tutors actually
Facebook ads. Had a
business. Nothing.
Damn! How can you teach you marketing?
Yeah. They taught us the basics of social media's coming up. Literally, see how this person sells to you, but we're not understanding it because you're not actually teaching us the ins and outs of it.
That's a scam.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Because I'm more of a bookworm. So I like to... Because for me, I'm more maths orientated. I'm more that side of orientated. Mm. So I like numbers. I like how deal stacks and all of that.
Yeah.
But I think when I went onto your course, you actually showed us step by step. Yeah. Like, okay, you got a house for 100 grand. You got to pay this much deposit. You got to refurb this. And I was learning step by step step. And through university, they don't teach that. They teach you just the wide range, expecting you to know it all.
And they make it more complicated than it should be.
So,
I mean, how long did you spend at business university?
I spent 3 years.
3 years. I would be expecting by the end of year one, you need to have at least made 50 grand. Yeah. Day one is, here's how you set up a company. Here's how you choose your company. Day two is, here's CRM systems. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Right, day 35 will be, get your phone out, stop, let's cold call some businesses. Right now, bang, bang, bang. I don't know. It's madness.
Because if they were doing that, everyone would be going to university.
And everyone would be successful in business and making money. It would revolutionise the economy. It would revolutionise the system. And also, when more people that are doing business are succeeding, if you're making money, you're also helping someone else make money. You're also paying taxes. They're paying taxes. You're having to buy things. You're now giving cleaners work. Like, everybody's benefiting.
Yeah.
It helps the economy. So mad respect to what you guys are doing. What would you say will be your biggest piece of advice to someone? Because you started, I mean, how much money did you have when we first started training together? How much did you have?
So we had 15,000 saved up between us. Mm-hmm. And we then went on to the academy and we put all of our savings into it. And we had literally enough. Well, we had, I think, a couple thousand left or something like that, but we had nothing left. And
we just knew we had to be in an environment where everyone was same level. So we joined it, got educated. Yeah, I think our best advice would be get educated, take massive action and surround yourself around like-minded people.
Just not to give up, because a lot of no's we got hundreds of no's before we got our first essay, and people back down after like their 10th no, 12th no. They're like, this doesn't work. But if you keep going, all you need is that one yes. And when we got that one yes, we took it with our hands straight away.
That's right. If one deal is making you a grand a month and it takes you 100 calls, I mean, geez, 100 calls. If you were working on this business full time, that would take you 2-3 days.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've just got to keep going, and it's great what you've done. It's really inspirational. We're going to leave your your Instagram handle and that in the description of the video so people can check you out. Yeah, really proud of you guys and excited about the future.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.